Anthony, is that you?
Yeah, it's me.
All right.
I'm all set.
All right, so, you know, a warning to those concerned. This is being recorded for probable netcast later, though we're not sure exactly. And if you have something particular, specific, that you want to talk about off this recording, I'll stop the recording. But right now I want this on
the recording. I would not want it recorded at all. If you want me to share some information, give an update on the case, and answer questions, I would prefer it not be recorded or broadcast.
No, I understand. But
Can you agree to that?
Well, no. What I want to do is I want you to give essentially an open report that doesn't involve strategies, but that talks about, that answers a few questions, if you're comfortable doing that.
Well, I tell you what, if you're going to insist on taping it over my objection, then I'll just take it question by question, and I'll either answer it or I won't.
That's fair enough. I mean, whatever you're comfortable with, Anthony, is fine.
Okay, well, I can give an update. I can update you on the status of the case to start with.
Okay.
May I ask how many people we have in the meeting today?
We have 3, 5, 6, 7 right now.
Okay, great, great. Well, hello to everybody. Can everybody hear me? You got it on speaker?
Everybody here, Anthony?
Good, Anthony.
Okay, all right.
We can all hear.
Can't see you, but it's good to hear you and good to be with you. So let me just explain off the top that we are now in the process of, we were able to stop the police from breaking up an encampment in Sausalito, where we have formed the newest local of the California Homeless Union, and where we filed a ex parte application, an emergency application for a temporary restraining order. The campers were able to stop the police day before yesterday when they came to evict the campers, and then yesterday there was no further attempt to evict the campers, even though they had posted notices that they would be ejected on the 16th.
Huh.
So we're very pleased with that victory, little victory, and our hope is that they've been, for the moment, paused by the onset of the litigation.
Question for you on that, Anthony. Here in Santa Cruz, you may remember, it was the community that got together and actually physically presented themselves. Was that a similar situation happening in Sausalito, to your knowledge, or not?
Yes, I mean, the members of the encampment, and it was kind of a collaborative effort between, we have members in the encampment, and then there are others who are, we represent in the encampment, and they were able to, effectively make a case for why the police should leave, and they left. There was no confrontation in the physical sense of any kind. There was simply a somewhat prolonged discussion back and forth. The police distributed notices to the individuals saying they needed to leave, but they left voluntarily. I think the chief of police saw that it was not appropriate to move at that point. He's the defendant in the case, in both his individual and official capacity, along with the city of Sausalito itself. And he made the correct judgment. We appreciate that he withdrew his officers at that point.
How many?
So let's focus. I don't want to talk about Sausalito. You guys wanted to talk about the Santa Cruz case.
I do, but just one last question on that case.
No.
How many people were impacted by that?
Robert, I do not have but a few minutes. My reply brief is due today. So let me go to Santa Cruz. We can talk about other places at another time. So let me make my report on Santa Cruz. So the status of the situation in San Lorenzo Park is that, of course, we have, we are, the Santa Cruz Homeless Union and Food Not Bombs are named organizational plaintiffs in the case. And we also have individual plaintiffs, some of whom are members of the union, most of whom are members of the union, and some who are not. So the status of the case, as you know, we did get a preliminary injunction from the court, Northern District Court, Magistrate Judge Susan Van Kulin. We're very pleased with that order, as far as I've been able to tell, and I've been contacted from all over the country about that decision and from within California.
Anthony, I should say we've shared your press release on this, so you needn't repeat that. I mean, it's certainly good work, both there.
You know what? You know. I'll just go to questions then.
Okay. Well, a question I have is: we actually had a member who came to a new member, a guy called Al, who lives in San Lorenzo Park. Who, you may have heard about this already, referenced the mosquito devices, that is, noise-making devices being used to drive away homeless people from various locations. You're familiar with this?
I'm somewhat familiar. What I would appreciate is if it's appropriate for you to contact me directly at my email address and provide that names, information, evidence
I'll try and do that, Anthony. I mentioned it to you because he wanted me to say that to you, and he just gave a presentation here at the group. So,
right, well, again, yeah. Please have him or you or someone
communicate that contact
information to me, mm-hmm. and we'll take it from there.
Another member was wondering how applicable is the San Lorenzo Park injunction reasoning to broader homeless attacks, because Highway 1 homeless, as you may know, are now under threat.
All right. So. Okay. Well, the status, it is not a federal court decision, a ruling by a federal court in the Northern District of California is not binding on any other federal court. In other words, and as you know, in Santa Cruz, we 2 years ago with the Roskamp situation, Judge Davila would not give us our preliminary injunction after we had a 2-day hearing. We got a TRO, but then TRO was temporary, and then after the hearing, he declined to issue the preliminary injunction. Whereas in Santa Cruz, Judge Van Kulen gave it to us. So the fact, either way, that is not controlling authority. The only controlling authority is either the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, or the United States Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. So, but having said that, the order that was granting our preliminary injunction in Santa Cruz is persuasive. It's something that we definitely have shared with others. In fact, that the judge's order was provided to homeless litigants in Denver, Colorado, as recently as last month. And we attached it as an exhibit to our current litigation in Sausalito. And so to some extent, we hope that it will have some ability to influence the judge who's been assigned in Sausalito. But that's, it's not controlling authority. It's not something they have to follow. Each judge can make their own determination based on the facts and the law before them.
How likely do you think it is, Ant? This was her question. How feasible a strategy is it to encourage getting injunctive relief all around Santa Cruz based on this? Or is it simply, you think, and this is, obviously we're all based on limited information here, but, is the San Lorenzo persuasive precedent likely to lure any other, attorneys into assisting, or you? You had time to, for extending this because of the, the majority of homeless people in Santa Cruz are not in San Lorenzo Park, as you know. So.
Yeah. Well, I would say to answer your question, and I think I already, I don't know who I talked to, a reporter or somebody, that we're, that we are looking at the situation in Highway 1, and that's what we're doing now. We're looking at the situation, whatever information you guys can provide to us on that would be appreciated.
I imagine it takes a certain amount of energy and time to draw this together, though you did seem to do it in pretty fast time, Anthony, last time. Congratulations on that.
Yeah, well, the facts presented are such, sometimes the facts presented and the scope of it is such that we can do that. Resources, scope, facts presented. In other circumstances, we don't have the necessary facts. We don't have the a scope that we think will result in a favorable ruling, and we don't have the evidence. And or sometimes we just are all the time we're limited with our resources. Our legal department is microscopic, mm-hmm. and so So to answer your question, I can't answer the question of whether what we've done so far, or whether this particular lawsuit, as you may know, preliminary injunction simply means freezing everything in place. We have an active, ongoing civil rights lawsuit against the city and other defendants arising from the situation in San Lorenzo Park. So even if the judge were to dissolve the preliminary injunction for some reason, our underlying case would continue. Temporary restraining order is preliminary injunction, simply freezes everything in place. I think we've got a status report due to the court in March 8th or 9th, and that'll be a public document, and we'll share that with you when we develop that.
A point that was raised, and which I raised with you as well, and continue to raise, has to do with the declarations of people on both sides.
I'm not going to answer that question. Next question.
Well, she wanted me to ask it anyway.
I'm out of respect for her.
I can mention you don't want to answer it. I guess.
Well, I told you before, Robert, that if I'm required to give an answer, which I believe might compromise the case, or is information that I don't want recorded or broadcast, I'm not going to answer it. So
I understand. I don't see how,
okay.
But you have your own perspective. What about Sacramento? I understand in Sacramento there was an injunction granted, but it's not being obeyed by the police. Or is that accurate? And if so, what kind of situation is
that? What happened in Sacramento earlier this year? We did get we got what's called a writ of mandate, and that's an order from a court to another court sometimes. Or it can be an order to an agency or a local government or some other entity most of the time. And what happened there was that the county health officer for Sacramento County had issued a public health order on, I believe, May 22nd, and then had issued subsequent orders indicating that encampments should not be taken down, and actually, I think the wording of the county health officer's order at that time was that the CDC guidelines should be strictly applied, and in our mind, in the form of an order from the county health officer, they moved from the legal status of guidelines to orders from the highest county health official and department in Sacramento County. And so 4 days later, we had already begun preparing to file our motion for restraining order, and then we got this very favorable order from the county health officer. So we moved forward with all the claims we had put together, which were constitutional, which were we were arguing about the CDC guidelines being the standard by which the city the county owed a duty not to break up these encampments, and there, it spreads, it leads to community spread of the virus, it separates people from services, and all the reasons the CDC guidelines advise against breaking up homeless encampments during the pandemic. And so, but when the county health department came out with that order, we then were able to go to court and tell the judge, here's an order. And back up a little bit. They issued the order, the county health department, and then within 48 hours, the Sacramento police violated the county health officer's order. We got declarations and evidence to show that they were continuing to break up. City police were continuing to break up encampments within 48 hours of being ordered by the county health officer not to do that. So then we were able to go into court and seek, and we got an order from Judge Earl that stated that simply a writ of mandate. In other words, it was a court order telling the city of Sacramento, you must obey the county health officer's order with regard to ceasing and desisting from breaking up homeless encampments. So that's how we were able to get that. Now, since then, it's true that in some cases, there has been, the city continues to violate that court order. And we actually went in for an order to show cause for contempt at one point, and unfortunately the judge didn't give it to us. It was a little bit more complicated question of infrastructure versus encampments generally, you know, and she didn't give it to us. And so in the interim between then and now, we have been in the process of putting together the evidence necessary to attempt again to hold the to see if we can get the city held in contempt by the judge. We're looking at other options as well, possibly in federal court. We're in state court in Sacramento. We're looking at other options because we do have evidence, and we're getting more evidence. I mean, it's very difficult to prevail in court without pretty solid evidence. Evidence that's reliable and, underscores, you can't just make allegations, general, you have to show evidence. And obtaining evidence is difficult. You know, they break up encampments and then people are gone because they've been dispersed. It's hard then to get declarations from people. It's not easy. It's very difficult to gather evidence in these cases. But we've been doing it. And as soon as we get a moment here to turn our attention to it, we're going to look very carefully going back into state court and try once again to get a contempt order.
And you were also quite successful, you and Mark Maron, up in Marysville, I understand.
Yeah, we're getting a little off San Lorenzo Park here, but Marysville, we got a good settlement for approximately 300 people in a class. It's class action, and we got a good settlement. It's been reported in the paper. I think we got close to $350,000. The amounts of each individual homeless person who was kicked out of seven different encampments there in Marysville was, you know, relatively modest, $2,000, $3,000, up to maybe $4,000 or $5,000, you know, which is, you know, that's not something to, that's not, you know, insignificant to someone who lost all their possessions and is surviving day to day. But we're pretty pleased with the outcome there. That was in federal court, and we have cases continuing to move forward in state court for individuals. But unfortunately, because of COVID and courts being closed and juries not being impaneled, it's going to be a while before those cases really move forward.
This is a question that's come up too. What percentage of that settlement actually made it to homeless people, as far as you remember?
You know, I don't know. It was actually, that was my role in the actual payout of the claims. You know, people have to go through a claims process. They have to file a claim. They have to show some evidence that they were actually in the encampment. They have to show some evidence of what losses they suffered, all that kind of stuff. These are compensatory damages to compensate people for personal items that were stolen or destroyed by the city. And I was not part of the process of the claims handling and the dispersal of the money, so I can't answer that.
Gotcha. I mean, was a percentage of the money simply allotted to the attorneys per se, or was it, you know, worked out some other way?
I can't answer that, and I won't answer that because I can't answer that. So.
Okay.
Do you have a question about that, Robert? Some concern about my answer?
Do I have concern about it? Well, you know, I'm always looking for as much information as I can, you know, to help me understand the situation.
Okay, well, you know, I mean, I think a lot of that is confidential information, and I'm not going to disclose it if I had it, which I don't. You know, who got what and what percentages were allocated for fees and costs of, we went significantly far in that case. And was ultimately mediated by a federal court. Magistrate judge was very helpful in helping us achieve the settlement. But I don't even know. I'd have to go back and look at the order. I don't even know how much. Everything I've told you now was reported in the press, and it's not confidential. But there's other aspects of the settlement that I believe are confidential, so I'm not going to answer any more questions.
Now, the reason I raise the question, I guess, also is questions raised by some homeless folks I've talked to is that they're concerned about the amount, the percentages that attorneys take out of this. And I know that you, a lot of what you do is not just court work, but you're an organizer, and you came.
Right, I first, Robert, I'm gonna interrupt you and just to say, you know, I'm not gonna answer any questions about my status as general counsel for the union, or individual cases, or what some person might say or not say. I'm not gonna answer any of them. So I only have a few more minutes. So if there's any more questions specifically about San Lorenzo, which I understand. Where you guys are at.
Well, there was a variety of questions. There was another one about the implications of Boise versus Martin, whether the settlement would have a chilling effect as the Jones settlement did in Los Angeles.
I have not read the settlement. What I've heard from attorneys who have read it and who are generally kind of share the same perspective that I do as a union attorney. Are a little concerned about it, and so I haven't had a chance to read it, so I can't analyze it, and I don't know if as what happened with in the Martin versus Boise, that case specifically said that the Jones case in Los Angeles, which is 12 years old, is not controlling. And that's because when the case against Jones versus City of Los Angeles was filed, and that case wound its way through the courts and settlement process, and they ultimately settled. I think they dismissed the lawsuit in exchange for a commitment by the City of Los Angeles to build or to make available a certain number of units of housing in the Skid Row part of Los Angeles.
Yeah, that's my understanding as well.
And ten years later, I saw where the same attorneys who had so as a result of that settlement, they dismissed the Jones case and vacated that decision. That decision, the Jones case, had been handed down by the Ninth Circuit. It's one of the most significant rulings in the Ninth Circuit on the issue, or anywhere in the country, on the question of homelessness that we've ever had. And unfortunately, in my opinion, should not have been. I'll tell you now, without, you know, I don't know all the details. You never know what was discussed. You're not part of a settlement negotiation. But I would proceed very carefully, very carefully, in vacating a significant decision like Jones in exchange for something which may or may not take place. A promise or something from the City of Los Angeles, because now we find 10 years later, the same attorneys who filed Jones and got that Ninth Circuit decision filed a new case, and in the very first paragraph, they reference the fact that 10 years ago, the Jones case was handed down, the city made an agreement, settled the case, and 10 years later, none of these units have been built. So I'll read the Martin versus Boise case when I get a chance, and see what it entails. Whether I don't believe that it includes vacating the Ninth Circuit decision in Martin versus Boise, but maybe it does. I think I would have heard pretty quick if I had heard that settlement vacates the Ninth Circuit decision.
Well,
so
that's
I'll have to read it.
That's the reason I was raising it, because you would have been one of the first to hear about that. You know,
already, though, the indications I get is that, you know, Anthony, when you read it, there's things you're not going to be happy about. Okay, I'll find out what they are. I just don't have time.
Uh-huh.
Right now.
Well, let us know when you do. I'd be curious what your opinion is.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's
the union will probably issue a statement on our reaction to the settlement in Martin versus Boise, particularly if it has included a vacating of the Ninth Circuit decision itself, or some other aspects. I will tell you, to be frank, I have difficulties with a lot of settlements in a lot of these cases. I have difficulty, and this is why we have the homeless union. I mean, our perspective is that there's only so much can be accomplished in the court system, and we use the litigation process. We take it very seriously, and we think it's very important. But we also think, in and of itself, that we think and some victories can be had, for example, San Lorenzo Park decision. But our principal perspective is that the litigation process is a means by which we can build a movement and win, lose, or draw. And we've lost as many of these things more, I'll say, over the last 7 years. We've had more defeats in court than we've had victories, and yet in every place we've been, win, lose, or draw, we've been able to change the narrative and establish new locals or strengthen existing locals.
You know, I think that's true, and that was one of the reasons that when you cut me off before about this, when I raised issues about, you know, the amount of money his attorneys get out of this. That's
I'm
one of the.
Well,
let me just finish my sentence.
Next
let me finish.
No,
let me finish. I'm going to finish.
Question. I got about 5 minutes, Robert. Next question.
I want to just finish the sentence, and I'll be happy to go on to the next question.
You can have your radio show, and you can opine on any.
I'm not trying
to
opine.
Excuse me.
I just don't like being cut off in the middle of what I'm saying.
I'll take another question.
So you're going to cut me off? Is that what you're saying?
Robert, I agreed to do this under certain circumstances. You insisted on taping it, the agreement, and broadcasting it, and the agreement we made was that I would take questions.
All right, I'll put the question.
You know, Robert.
All right, fine. That's fine. I'll put the question.
Robert,
I'll put the question.
Let's stick to the agreement.
I am sticking to the agreement. I'll put the I'll put the question. I have a question, Anthony. If I may do my question.
Okay. Question.
The question is this. Given that a lot of homeless folks have hostility and mistrust for attorneys, what is a good way to overcome that kind of mistrust that you've found? Because one of those ways is having to do with division of money. That's the reason I raised it. That's the only reason.
Okay.
Okay? And what kind of strategy should we use is my question.
I think there's the general... There's a general, totally understandable suspicion of attorneys generally across the spectrum, across the political spectrum. Frankly, you know, something has got to be done to address the issue of the lack of resources for attorneys that take these kind of cases. I mean, we don't get any, you know, every once in a while we'll take a case on contingency, meaning that... there's a share that's negotiated as to what the attorneys will get by way of a judgment from a jury or a settlement. And that's because the attorneys front every cost of the litigation. You know, and those costs run into the thousands, tens of thousands, sometimes hundreds of thousands of dollars. So our little, speaking for our legal department, we've never recouped very much. We've recouped nothing in the majority of our cases, and we've recouped some in a couple of cases. And that is just so that we can, we can continue to be able to represent and take on these cases. I think that the way to resolve it is, frankly, and we're trying to do this now, is to create a whole new kind of paradigm for how a new approach to legal representation and in conjunction with and meshed with union building, movement building. So it's not going to be easy, but I understand the concerns. A lot of times the press will vilify attorneys who are doing the right thing, trying to do the right thing by making a point which is of questionable validity. Well, you know, the plaintiffs, the homeless, the people, the tenants, whoever it is, got, you know, almost nothing, and the attorneys walked away with millions of dollars. You do see this in toxic tort cases. When I first started practicing law, I worked for a major law firm that represented toxic torts, you know, asbestos and mold and stuff like that, you know, chemical kind of stuff. And so, you know, there's no doubt, and a lot of them, they'll report this out in such a manner as to create the false impression that somehow the plaintiff's attorneys in these cases are profiting at the expense of the people they represent. Well, that's bullshit. I'll say it right now. And if you or anyone else wants to continue to propagate that myth, you're only helping these corporations. You're only helping the very defendants that we sue. You're only helping the city of Santa Cruz. You're only helping those who are oppressing the poor and homeless, because you contribute to that suspicion. And so I would, you know, you can say whatever you want to. It's your radio show and it's your meeting. But I would point out that you're not helping at all. The point has to be made is that the only way these cases can be taken, the only way that they can be taken, especially by poorly resourced attorneys and legal departments such as ours, is so that we can, that's the only way they can be taken. The only real settlement, I've participated in some settlements, the vast majority of settlements I've participated in since we've created the homeless union, there has been no money. We're looking much more, we're far more interested in changing conditions. I can't talk too much about it, but in the discussions leading up to the settlement in Marysville, we tried our best to actually get the county and the county, Yuba County and the city of Marysville, and we put onto the table, and we were willing to, really let's step aside from damages, money damages, compensatory damages for what items were destroyed, and move to changing things. Because the reality of it is that even if you get an agreement, even if someone has a little money to try to replace some of the things that were destroyed when they break up the encampments, it's only a matter of time before the counties and cities are going to come back in and bust up the next encampment or pass a law that says you can't have this and you can't have that. So we're about systemic change. Now, we're about getting at the core. We're not typical, even of a lot of the homeless advocate attorneys who really don't see much further than, oh, they took your tent, they took your cooking materials, they took your personal possessions. Okay, well, let's get you some money back. But we're limited in what we can do. We're limited by the resources of sometimes failing to settle and extending litigation, in some cases for years. And that is not something that's in the interest of our union members and the homeless community either.
And I think
I got one more minute,
I think you put that very eloquently, Anthony. Do other people have any questions they want to raise with Anthony Prince, who's the general counsel?
We're talking about possibility of them taking things from the camp. Why don't we get people getting a list of what they have in the camps so that, and we keep a copy and they keep a copy, so there's proof of what's taken. Because if it's written and we've got a copy, they've got a copy, nobody can make any claims other than that.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I'll take my last remaining minute here to answer that, or to reply to it. That is an excellent suggestion. And I think that's something, I don't want to go into too much detail about it, that's something that we can definitely talk about with our union leadership down there in Santa Cruz and get some help in doing it. We always recommend, and we've learned the hard way. I'll give you an example. In Marysville, where we had the case, they actually said, well, you don't have any proof of the items that we listed in one case. Dozens and dozens of items. We had witnesses ready to testify if the case went forward to trial, to testify that they'd seen these items. The police department itself had seen these items. The mayor had seen these items. But then when it came to documenting what was lost specifically and its approximate value, we had a real difficulty. And we said, well, look, when you destroyed the encampment and bulldozed everything, whatever records remained, whatever records our clients had, whatever receipts they had, you know, let alone the items themselves, were destroyed right along with everything else. So you're asking us to produce evidence that you yourself destroyed. We made that argument, and it had some, the judge could see some of that, but we would have been in a far better position if what the last, questioner said had been done. I absolutely encourage that. It needs to be done carefully. It needs to be done in such a way as that we respect the privacy of individuals. But I would say that you're much better off if you can walk in there, not just with a list, but photographs. I mean, the most solid, reliable evidence you can of what people have. And they may not want to, you know, document everything they have, but the things that are, you know, the most matter, are most difficult to replace, personal items, family stuff, you know, stuff like that, medications. Want to be careful with that, too. But, yeah, I think it's an excellent suggestion. So I got to go. I want to thank you guys for giving me a chance to update you, and we don't. This doesn't have to be the last opportunity to do this, but I got to get back to work on our newest case here. Okay.
Hey, thanks for taking the time, Anthony. Anybody else want to say anything to him?
Go get him, Anthony.
Thank you for your kind service.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
All right, you guys take care. All right.
You take care too, Anthony.
Okay. Bye bye.
Bye bye.